do these lines, I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back, alive and well. May 15th, halfway through the fifth month of 2017. lot of stuff going on, as usual, over the weekend. And God, it's just this flurry or frenzy. I don't know what to call it at this point, but the news cycle just won't stop. So, you know, we're going to break down some of the stuff going on because there's a lot of it. And we're going to be, you know, just trying to break through some of this propaganda, right? Because that's what this show and our entire company is all about. You know, the anti-media breaking through these mainstream narratives that are trying to get us to do certain things that may be against our own interests. One thing in particular that we covered today on the anti-media is the drug war. A former undercover drug officer, undercover for 14 years, is now speaking out about how just dumb the drug war is, how drug prohibition is a horrible idea that makes the problem worse. So, you know, that's our most viral article of the day. So go check that out. We're not going to talk too much about that because there's a bunch of geopolitical stuff going on. You know, the war on terror is a whole other another aspect of this propaganda campaign that we need to break through because, you know, the war on terror, I guess similarly to the war on drugs, it just creates more terrorism. That's all it's accomplished, really, and bankrupting the country, forcing us to pay for the cost of these trillion-dollar perpetual wars, and then it doesn't fix the problem. In fact, it makes it worse. So we're going to talk about that. Some of the propaganda going on today against Russia, as always, continues. It's going into overdrive at this point, so we're going to talk about that. But first, let me introduce my partner in crime tonight, our amazing journalist, Jake Anderson. What's up, dude? How you doing tonight?
Hey, buddy. Pretty good. Yeah, just fighting the info war. God, I really hate it that Alex Jones ruined that phrase because it's a great phrase.
You're in the trenches, so we can take the word from him.
But, you know, I posted today on the old Fed book there, I was expecting a lot more resistance because, you know, and I've talked about this many times before, we kind of live in alternate universes, me and you. The alt-right are the left and the right. Like a lot of my friends are like, vast majority of them voted for Clinton. Maybe they didn't love her, but, you know, they're on the liberal side. They, in general, tolerate the neoliberal agenda. And then on your side, it seems like a lot of your friends have fallen in with not so much the alt-right, but are more on the, you know, let's give Trump a chance.
Well, hey, a lot of them, let's be straightforward. A lot of the people who I consider, who I thought were like on the principled side of fighting for freedom and, you know, making the world a better place, have fallen into the alt-right trap. I'm not going to say a big percentage, but there's a contingent of my friends who are definitely falling for the alt-right crap, which is just more and more of this divide and conquer stuff. But yeah, go ahead.
What are their names and social security numbers?
Let me give you their addresses and where their mother lives and all that.
Well, anyway, I want to speak out, but there's so much, and I'm sure you've noticed this too, there's so much emotion locked up in this for people. People are frustrated, they're angry, they're worried, and they don't know exactly where to put their anger. So when you challenge a concept that is dear to them, in this case, liberals clinging to this hope that there is a Watergate-type scandal that's going to go down with Trump in regards to the Russia collusion, when you challenge that idea, they get upset. And there's actually a scientific explanation for this. Do you look at the oatmeal? It's a strip.
What's it called? You broke up there for a second.
Sorry. It's called The Oatmeal. Have you ever read it? It's a comic strip.
I've seen them a couple of times, but I'm not like a regular follower of it.
Okay. Well, he did one recently. It was very, very interesting. I'm going to have to look up the exact name of it. Basically, there's a psychological phenomenon. And I believe he called it backfire. Or something like that. I'll find it during the course of the show. But essentially, they did a research study and they showed that they literally were like looking at MRIs of the brain. And they showed that when people are presented with information that challenges certain preconceptions they have, it literally fires up the same parts of the brain that fire up during the fight or flight response. Are basically, people feel physically assaulted when you challenge a conceptual premise that they hold dear to themselves. So it's very much an emotional thing. And so today I posted this, Noam Chomsky, who's a liberal darling, and he even came out and said, look, we're the laughing stock of the world right now because of this Russian collusion thing, because we have we've literally developed barbaric coups to overthrow a people's government. And now we're going to sit here and have the audacity to, without any evidence, claim that there was, foreign collusion. And let's be clear, they're essentially arguing that Russia hacked or facilitated the hacking of these files that show what Hillary Clinton actually said, gave them to WikiLeaks, and then WikiLeaks purposely set them out to undermine Hillary Clinton. Now, of course, this is presupposing that we should be more interested in how the information came about as opposed to what's actually contained in the information. But what they're asking us to believe is that we should think that Russia, WikiLeaks, which has an impeccable record for truth, and the Trump campaign all colluded and are all lying, but our intelligence agencies, which have known to have been caught lying and doing malicious, horrible civil liberty breaches, they're telling the truth, with no evidence, but Russia, WikiLeaks, and the Trump campaign have this coordinated campaign that would involve hundreds of people lying. They're asking us to believe this basically a conspiracy theory, with no evidence, and it just drives me crazy because I cover conspiracy theories a lot. I've got a new one that should be coming out tomorrow about 10 conspiracy theories that turned out to be true. And I'm routinely criticized, and conspiracy theorists are routinely criticized for not having evidence. But here we have every single mainstream news media and the entire leftist liberal establishment peddling a conspiracy theory with no evidence. It's just driving me nuts.
Jake, let me just intervene here because I don't know if you've seen this yet. This may be breaking news. You remember Seth Rich?
Yeah.
A local Fox affiliate in Washington, D.C. is reporting that Seth Rich's family's private investigator is now claiming that Seth Rich did indeed have contact with WikiLeaks prior to his death. Now, something to keep in mind here, first of all, is that the family has been trying to tamp down on any of these. Because, you know, there's been theories, this guy with the DNC, Seth Rich was a DNC staffer. He wound up murdered in Washington, D.C. And Julian Assange and WikiLeaks stoked up theories about his death being related to the DNC leaks. Because Julian Assange actually said, you know, WikiLeaks put out a bounty for information on this guy. And Julian Assange hinted at it in an interview with Dutch TV. So now the family, the family's investigator, because the family's been looking for answers. They've been crowdfunding money to hire an investigator. The cops haven't been able to give them any answers. Now the family's lawyers or investigators saying that Seth Rich had contact with WikiLeaks prior to his death.
That's really interesting. That's an incredible revelation. I mean, that
big. So
it basically makes it very likely that a Hillary affiliate killed him.
Yeah, it does. And so here's the thing. Here's the hypocritical thing here. So you were just talking about how all these people are peddling this Russia conspiracy theory, and the newest one just came out was that Trump gave Russian officials classified information when he met with them in the White House just a few days ago. This is the Washington Post reporting that unnamed intelligence officials are confirming that Donald Trump gave classified information to these Russian officials while they're in the White House just a couple days ago, in the middle of him being under scrutiny for firing James Comey. We're to believe that this has actually happened. Now, I'm not saying it's not real, but again, unnamed quote-unquote officials in the quote-unquote intelligence community have confirmed to Washington Post. Like this is like we've seen this too many times. It's been months and months and months, and we have no evidence.
For an intelligence agency, they really don't like to present factual evidence.
Ah, very, very weird.
What's interesting about that Seth Rich thing, man, is that during the campaign, when it first happened, when Seth Rich was first killed, the family lawyered up with a legal team that was actually working with the Hillary Clinton campaign because they didn't want the narrative to start getting out there that they had something to do with it. So it's pretty I'd have to go back and look through to actually find out the guy's name. But I remember at the time being like, what in the hell? Why is the Hillary Clinton campaign basically sequestering and quarantining this family? And so it's actually pretty shocking to
This is big, bro. Look at this. So the investigator told Fox 5, quote, "I have a source inside the police department that has looked me straight in the eye and said, Rod, we were told to stand down on this case, and I can't share any information with you," unquote.
Holy shit.
So, like, a huge, like, this is big.
I'm claiming this article right now, man. I'm going to write it.
Hold on, because I think we already have two people looking into it.
All right, fine. I should get all the conspiracy theory articles, dude.
Sorry, hold on. This is big, so I'm trying to coordinate here. We're live on the air, and I'm like, you know.
I'll blast for a little bit.
Whatever you say.
Yeah. So slap this would me. Be this would be this would be in a way, really speaks to the possibility. Man, if this thing explodes, I mean, if more evidence starts coming out. If they can tie his death to the DNC, I mean that's bigger than Watergate right there.
The Republicans are working with the Kremlin, and the DNC is taking out its own staffers. So
the Kremlin?
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
back to this, you know, Washington Post created conspiracy theory about Russia interfering with the election. anybody saying, and again, we're being presented this as factual information while never being given proof, and yet anybody saying, well, I don't want to believe it without seeing the proof, we're considered the ones that are like fringe and the ones that are conspiracy theorists, because we're not just saying, oh yeah, we believe what the CIA is telling the Washington Post to tell us. Like, we completely believe it. We don't need to see evidence. We don't need to see anything. It's like, I'm sorry, but the CIA is not the most credible organization out there known for telling people the truth. I'm sorry, but they're not. So I want to see proof or I don't believe it. And so we're considered, oh, well, that's crazy. You're a conspiracy theorist for not believing our conspiracy. And yet at the same time, when anybody was just asking questions about Seth Rich and saying, well, is there a connection here? I mean, it's kind of just mysterious that a DNC staffer gets murdered. Nothing, you know, he wasn't robbed. He wasn't mugged. He was just killed for what? And anybody asking questions about that, it's like, oh, no, well, come on, dude. Like, that's a conspiracy theory. You can't talk about that. It's crazy.
Julian Assange, essentially, I mean, he did one of the most brilliant reveals I've ever seen in my life, because he basically was able to convey that Seth Rich was involved in a leak without directly saying it. He basically just brought his name up in a conversation about the dangers of leaking information. And then the reporter said, well, wait, are you saying that Seth Rich was working with WikiLeaks? And he goes, well, no, I didn't say that. So he was able to put it out there without saying it. It was pretty brilliant.
Yeah, so this is probably going to be the biggest story tomorrow in independent media, just so you guys know. I mean, this is breaking.
Yeah, but the mainstream media won't say shit about it.
No. Nah. There's that. And, you know, again, anytime that there's any prospect, hold on, we got an alarm coming through. Jake, take over for a sec.
Well, it'd be pretty, I can't get over this Seth Rich thing. I wonder how far it'll go. I wonder, and for those of you who maybe, you know, aren't as familiar with who Seth Rich is, Seth Rich was a DNC staffer who was killed during the election, just murdered on the street, and it was very mysterious, and many of us believed that he worked with WikiLeaks to facilitate one of the leaks, one of the DNC leaks, and Julian Assange in a way that I just mentioned kind of put it out there that he was involved in the leak, which would reasonably lead one to conclude that Seth Rich was killed for leaking the information. I mean, that's clearly the implication. Now, who's going to be doing the killing if the leak, who's the leak targeting, who is it affecting? It's affecting and damaging the DNC and Hillary Clinton. So it stands to reason that someone within that sphere of influence was hired to kill him. If that investigation digs deep and finds something, that could be huge, man. That could be, I mean, that's unbelievable. Actually, I can't believe that. I can't believe his lawyer would come out and say that. That lawyer, it will be dead.
Yeah, it's an investigator. So let's pull up this audio, because this did happen a while back. Just a refresher here. This is Julian Assange on a Dutch TV interview where the Seth Rich topic kind of gets brought up. Here we go.
It's a miracle. In the American political lexicon, there's such a thing as the October surprise. The stuff that you're sitting on, is an October surprise in there? Do you even know what you're sitting on?
WikiLeaks never sits on material. Our whistleblowers go to significant efforts to get us material, and often very significant risks. As a 27-year-old, I works for the DNC, who was shot in the back, murdered just 2 weeks ago for unknown reasons as he was walking down the street in Washington. So
that was just a robbery, I believe, wasn't it?
No, there's no finding. So
what are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that our sources take risks, and they become concerned to see things occurring like that.
But was he one of your sources then? I mean,
we don't comment on who our sources are.
Why make the suggestion about a young guy being shot in the streets of Washington?
Because you have to understand how high the stakes are in the United States. and that our sources are, you know, our sources face serious risks. That's why they come to us, so we can protect their anonymity.
But it's quite something to suggest a murder. That's basically what you're doing.
Well, then, others have suggested that we are investigating to understand what happened in that situation with Seth Rich. I think it is a concerning situation. There's not a conclusion yet. We wouldn't be willing to state a conclusion, but we are concerned about it. And more importantly, a variety of WikiLeaks sources are concerned when that kind of thing happens.
Yeah, so, you know, right out of WikiLeaks' mouth, it's like, okay, yeah, we have concerns that this guy may have been murdered because he was one of our sources.
Right.
And now, just today, and again, this is this is a local Fox News affiliate out of Washington, D.C. reporting on this. Hopefully this story remains up. I mean, once this story starts getting attention, there's going to be a lot of pressure to pull it down. So, you know, this is something really big, and it could be, at the very least, you know, accusations are going to start flying of political assassination in the United States. And, you know, we haven't heard those kind of, that kind of talk in a pretty long time, you know? So I think, you know, the last time there was a high profile assassination, you know, really, you got to look back pretty far. I think into like the 70s and 60s, I think. I could be wrong. Some of these are slipping my mind, but this is a big deal, a really big deal. And it's just what's so crazy about this whole thing is that as much of a mess that Trump has been, and he's been just scandal after scandal after scandal, and yeah, many of them have been stupid, superficial thing. I mean, CNN was reporting that Trump got 2 scoops of ice cream and other people only got 1 the other day. I mean, some of this stuff is just complete shit, right? But I mean, yeah, Trump has done some real dumb things and said some really dumb things, made some really, really dumb statements.
Yeah, we don't like Trump. We're not saying we like Trump. We're saying, you know, that there's a lot more important things going on than this politicized conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, despite the mess that Trump is making, the Democrats have no cohesion. I mean, the Democrats have no cohesion because they're still trying to recover from what they did in their self-sabotaging they did in their last election, which included the sabotaging of Bernie Sanders, the collusion of the DNC with Clinton, and all the other various things that had to do with Clinton corruption and all the crap that all the dirt that they have on Clinton. I mean, the DNC is injured like really, really badly to the point of they're almost on the verge of not, you know, coming back from this. And now with this Seth Rich thing, if it blows up like I think it might, you know, the DNC is really like hobbled at this point. And then at the same time, Trump has the Republicans in complete disarray, and the Republicans are eating each other alive. Like the entire both parties here, again, this is going back to something we've been seeing for the last few months, including the run-up to the election. The two parties are just dying off. They're like killing themselves off. It really is interesting to see this happen. And this Seth Rich thing is just going to add a little more fuel to this fire. So, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but the thing that we talked about the other night after the French election was how, you know, the establishment could co-opt a third party when they feel like, okay, the Republicans and Democrats have been dragged through the mud so much that it's time to just abandon those parties. The establishment could run a third party run and actually win. And everyone would think, oh, an independent finally won, and finally we're outside of the two-party system. But then the guy that they put into place could basically be just exactly the same, if not, you know, worse than what you would have gotten from a Republican or a Democrat. You know, and that's, I think, is what may be going on over in France, because, you know, the guy that won is literally a former Rothschild banker, but he's an independent of a political party that was only established a year ago, and he won, you know. And so, but the guy is a hardcore, like, establishment favorite, even though he's outside of the two-party system in France. I could see something like that happening here in the U.S. because at this point, it's like the Democrats aren't going to be able to recover and oppose Trump. And Trump is just mired in so much controversy that the Republicans are in disarray. I mean, it's very, very interesting time politically in the United States. I mean, Jake, what do you make of all this chaos, dude?
God, I mean, you know, I was talking about kind of what's going to happen with this dude at yoga in the locker room. And he's kind of an older gentleman, but so he's seen a lot. He's an older gentleman on the left. He's seen a lot. He generally, you know, distrusts both parties. And, you know, he believes, and I think he's probably right, that I think the Republicans are probably, you know, kind of using Trump right now to, you know, try and push through a few things that they wanted to do. And then I think as soon as the heat becomes too much, they'll hang them out to dry. And, you know, who knows how it's going to happen. I don't think anyone can predict right now. I'm a little bit skeptical. I don't think anything's going to come out of the collusion unless they manufacture the evidence. Because I think they would have already done it. If I think they had the evidence, I think they would have already presented it and would already be working towards impeachment.
Look, if there's evidence of the president actually colluding with Russia to get elected, and in the intelligence agencies refuse to put the evidence out, I mean, that's treasonous.
Yeah,
these guys are going to make these accusations. They have a responsibility to put the evidence out there and get rid of Trump. Like, if this shit is true, put the evidence out and impeach him.
Honestly, I think, and this is a conspiracy theory, but yeah, this is my hot take on it. You know, WikiLeaks in their Vault 7 disclosures regarding the CIA, I think it was in Marble, the Marble release, they showed that the CIA has exploits that can basically manufacture a cyber hacking signature and attribute it to a country, to a foreign country. They have the ability to do a false flag cyber attack. It wouldn't surprise me if they were actively working on creating that paper trail right now. But that's just...
for you right here on that, like, dude, hold on. All right, so you know that huge ransomware thing, and this is a big story too that we're going to be—
yeah, that's a weird one.
We're going to be talking about this tomorrow, because look, we got a big article coming out on it tomorrow, but the NSA developed this tool that was used to hack everybody or to put ransomware on everyone, and now it's being reported that from several mainstream news outlets that North Korea was behind this ransomware thing.
Of course.
And so, look, first of all, the NSA developed the tool. Second of all, we found out the CIA is able to frame anybody it wants with these type of cyber attacks. So now the media is coming out and saying, oh, well, it's a— North Korea seems to be, you know, maybe a suspect in this, because it seems like maybe that there's ties here. North Korea, dude, they hardly even have internet. You see the computers that they're using? They're like old, big, giant computers, and like North Korea is not spreading highly sophisticated ransomware. Yeah.
What do they have to gain from that? I mean, are they looking— – do you really think that the leader of North Korea is trying to get some Bitcoin from people? Like, really?
I need the Bitcoin to fuel my rockets.
Absurd. But, yeah, I mean, that's— – you know, here's the problem now with some of these CIA releases from WikiLeaks. We can't trust anything they say now. It literally, I mean, it's getting to the point now where information and data itself can be manufactured, and this is just going to get worse and worse and worse. I mean, I don't think I can ever believe anything I see in a mainstream news headline anymore. Just from what I've seen go down in the last 15 years, like, I just— I routinely refer to the, you know, Vault 7 or whatever— is it Vault 7? Jeez, I can't remember what number it is, but I've been tracking it for a while, and you know, it's spectacularly disturbing what they're capable of doing, and we've seen what they're capable of doing in terms of policy, because the CIA has manipulated. You know, they've overthrown governments at the same time as the IMF and the World Bank are wreaking economic carnage on the third world. Our CIA has been actively launching paramilitary operations across the world since even before Vietnam. And I tracked, you know, there's literally like 50 of them. There's like 50 different countries that we've interfered with. So this is, you know, an organization, an agency of the government that's been actively subverting other countries, actively subverting the truth. And now we know they have the ability to do it in terms of cyber hacking and information itself. There's literally no reason, there's no way we could ever trust anything that comes from the CIA or really any of our intelligence agencies anymore.
Yeah, it's just, it's so crazy what these guys are trying to do. I mean, are they seriously trying to make us believe that they're going and overthrowing other countries to protect free elections? Is that what we're supposed to believe?
A lot
of the countries that are overthrown by the CIA are democratically elected.
Right.
In fact, what goes on is the CIA overthrows democratically elected governments and many times backs dictatorships and strongmen or military coups.
Well, you know, I'm reading The Secret History of the American Empire by the John Perkins, who wrote Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And he, this is a guy that knows firsthand. He was worked for the IMF and the World Bank. He literally was going in and writing these contracts with countries to get them to take out these giant loans from the IMF and the World Bank. And these loans massacred certain countries. Other countries, Malaysia was able to respond, or they were able to pull their way out of it. But you know, countries that didn't sign on to these agreements are doing okay right now. For example, China, they steered clear. I mean, of course, they didn't need it, but one of the conclusions Perkins is coming to is that, you know, we are conquerors, and of course, there's been many empires that have conquered land before us. You know, China, for example, you know, they basically are kind of holding Tibet, you know, and that's just one example. But the way they do it is different, and there's a difference between past empires who have very transparently said, we're going to go and take your land, and because we want to expand our territory, and it's for noble causes. And of course, they flower up the speech and they make it seem like a noble thing, but they're transparent with what they're doing. We're taking more land. We're taking more territory. What the U.S. empire has been doing since, you know, like the 50s, is this, you know, subterfuge of empire. It's secretive empire. And the conclusion he comes to is that we can't call ourselves a democracy when what is supposed to be an informed population doesn't even know the mechanisms by which we're expanding our empire. And most Americans don't know the history of the empire and how we used the IMF and how we used the World Bank and how all these agencies work together for economic imperialism. So can we really call ourselves a democracy when most people don't even know the tools by which our government are conquering other lands? It's something we need to start thinking about, because this is the biggest resource grab in history. It's been going on since the 60s. It's the biggest resource grab in history. And, you know, at the very least, I don't think we can stop it, but at the very least, we need to learn from it so that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, dude. So, you know, one of the things that I think is, especially if this narrative that North Korea is to blame for this massive cyber attack, if that starts to stick and it starts becoming a mainstream narrative, right now it's just kind of like, oh well, some investigators think that North Korea could be, you know, tied into this. If we start seeing the Trump administration coming out and saying, yeah, this was North Korea, you know, one interesting angle here to think about is that the cyber attack wasn't so much it didn't affect the United States too much, but it really took hold in Europe and other places around the world, especially in England. It kind of tied up their entire health system for a little while, and so that's a pretty big deal. What this could also do is help, if this narrative does stick that it can be blamed on North Korea, it'll help mobilize countries that may have been a little skeptical. I haven't seen much of, the UK complaining about North Korea and stuff. So, maybe they're going to try to mobilize Europe against North Korea for the North Korean, North Korean war.
Russia and China were hit by this just as much as anyone else. Do you think North Korea is cyber hacking Russia and China? Is that what we're supposed to believe?
That's true. I forgot that they were also affected by this. This is just another key to the puzzle, I guess. And God, things just get weirder and weirder as we go. So this is just.
Well, we have front row seats to the collapse of an empire, man. So at least get the popcorn out.
Yeah, and so it's tough, dude. And last week on Monday, you guys remember, I wasn't in the greatest of moods, and I was kind of feeling a little bit disillusioned by everything going on. But I feel much better at this point, but it's there's literally so much happening and so many crazy, crazy things. And I guess the thing that bugged me the most is just, these guys teeing off on each other in the streets. But it makes more sense, Jake, now that you mentioned what you were saying about, when people experience ideas that challenge their worldview, it actually affects them like almost like violently. And so now it makes more sense that these dudes are out in the street. They're like, well, I disagree with you. Well, I also disagree with you. And so they start beating each other over the head with sticks instead of arguing, because when someone challenges your worldview from a polar opposite direction, it almost feels like they're punching you. So you punch them back. Now I'm not going to sit here and rationalize or make excuses for anybody out there beating up people in the street because they disagree with politically, but I guess for the people who are less cerebral, I guess you could say, they don't know much other way other than to go out and express their frustrations violently. And we live in a violent culture. Everything that we know is violence. If we have a problem in the world, it's solved by violence. People do bad things, they go to jail. People use drugs they're not supposed to use, they go to jail. Countries don't do what they're supposed to do, we bomb them. Like, we live in a very violent place. So I guess the next logical step is, well, you disagree with my political opinion, well, I'm going to be violent against you. And that's what's going on right now in this country. And it's, I guess to me, that's the most frustrating thing, that, there's so many issues that people could be uniting on and saying, look, this enough is enough. Instead, it's like, screw you guys. I'm going to beat other people up because I disagree with you slightly on a political issue. And that to me is frustrating, but it's the reality that we're in right now. And all we can work to do is help resolve these crazy issues, but without letting it affect us too much personally, where it's like ruining our day because some asshole did some stupid shit that doesn't make any sense. Well, we can't let it get us down personally, because the issue at hand is just so large. As you said, Jake, I think a lot of the frustrations in this country and the reason why people are out there teeing off on each other is because you're right. We are experiencing kind of the downward turn of an empire. I don't know when it's going to end. Some empires last, some empires decline for a very, very long time, like the Roman Empire. It was declining for, I think, like 1,000 years or something before it finally, gave in. But the reason I think why people are so frustrated right now is because the downturn happened. I think it peaked out maybe in the 2008-2009 housing bubble and all that stuff. We reached our peak, right? The U.S. empire reached its maximum. And now we're in, we're at the point where we're contracting. And people are starting to feel it in their pocketbooks, their rent, their house prices, the cost of living and all that stuff going up, our wages not going up fast enough to keep up with that stuff. So everyone's kind of Their savings have been eroded. I mean, half the people in the country don't have $1,000 worth of savings. You know, the people are living paycheck to paycheck. I think like 75% of families are living paycheck to paycheck. That's why people are so frustrated. They're like, holy shit, like our way of life is changing and for the worse. And so they're frustrated and they're willing to believe almost anything. And that's why all this fake news crap spreads around so quickly. I see fake news every single day in my damn news feed, like 10 times. Facebook keeps saying, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, about fake news and fake news. I've seen just as much fake news as I've seen ever. People are grasping at straws to believe in stuff. I just saw an article. In fact, it was on Vice, which I was surprised, but it was four fake news stories that liberals were sharing like hell on Facebook last week. And, you know, they're just four crazy things about Donald Trump that weren't true, and or that, you know, that Donald Trump, you know, was just doing all kinds of crazy things. People just believe that stuff. And so all this fake news is spreading. People are looking for anyone to believe and anyone to blame. And that's exactly why people are like, yeah, you know what? Maybe Trump's right. We need to build a wall because the Mexicans are the reason why we only have, you know, why we're living paycheck to paycheck. And 10 years ago, we weren't. You know, it's like maybe it's the Mexicans or maybe it's the Muslims or the refugees or something. Like they're looking for anything to believe. And it's unfortunate that people are gullible enough to start believing these just, you know, scapegoats and all this crap that's being made up to shift the blame from the people who truly deserve the blame. You know, right. And, you know, obviously we're talking about the oligarchs. The people that are running the show have kind of sold us down the river, you know, and kind of gambled away on, you know, our safety net and everything, all the savings and all the stuff that the U.S. should be having right now, which is, you know, maybe had it not been for this crazy parasitic oligarchy, yeah, the U.S. wouldn't have a huge empire, but we would have a lot of stuff that the people are asking for, healthcare and college, maybe, you know, having that stuff being affordable at the very least. I mean, these are things that are obviously doable, but instead we've got a huge empire and we've got a corrupt oligarchy running the show. And so they shift the blame away from the real problem here and they try to blame anybody but themselves. And in that way, Trump kind of works as a great lightning rod to take pressure off of, you know, the real people who are in charge of things. Trump is a great tool for them because he receives a bunch of the blame. And don't get me wrong, Trump deserves blame because, you know, he's their puppet. And if you're a puppet, you're a piece of shit. So yeah, Trump deserves the blame. But at the same time, we shouldn't invest all of our energy attacking Trump when Trump, as easy as just a quick impeachment, Trump's gone and all that criticism and all that scrutiny going at the government disappears with Donald Trump. And so we shouldn't be looking at the individual. We should be looking at the bigger machine here. And I guess the more correct term for it at this point would be the deep state. Looking at the deep state and putting our criticism in that direction and trying to unite various groups of people around this idea of ending the influence of the deep state, would be much, much more effective than the alt-right and Antifa going out in the streets and cracking each other's heads. That is not effective. That's not really accomplishing anything besides dividing people more. And I'm not choosing sides on this, but, you know, I'm just saying this going and beating other people up who are basically have similar frustrations that you have, that's not how we fix things. That's not. There's a whole group of parasites that are taking advantage of all of us, and they're just wanting us to beat each other up. They're laughing. I swear they're laughing. They're sitting back like, oh, look at these guys just beating each other up. The peasants beating each other up, killing each other. And we're just sitting back and they're blaming each other and we're just chilling. And they're blaming Mexicans and they're blaming Muslims. And the oligarchs are just chilling back. Like, dude, our priorities are backwards. But I get it. There's so much. These guys are so good at propaganda that they can almost get us to do anything. In fact, here in San Diego last week, they were protesting in favor of James Comey, the FBI, the former FBI director. They were protesting in favor of an FBI director here in San Diego. Like, I was like stunned. I even made a post like saying, like, dude, if any of my friends are out there protesting in favor of James Comey, like, don't even talk to me anymore because you're so lost. It's ridiculous. But it's like, dude, the propaganda is so strong. They can get people marching for James Comey at this point. The same people were just saying James Comey cost Hillary Clinton the election several months ago. The same exact people are now marching in the streets for James Comey. Like, the propaganda is so effective that people have, I don't know, they've kind of given up critical thinking, I guess. The critical thinking no longer exists, and it's just like this hive mind of groupthink where it's like either you're on the left or the right, and you have to choose one side or the other, and both sides are getting more and more and more polarized, and if you don't choose a side, well, then people attack you for it. Like, this is all propaganda stuff that is, like, very Bernays-like, and, you know, a bunch of people are getting caught up in these pitfalls, and it's working, and I guess that's why I've been so pissed off and I've been so frustrated, because it's working so damn well, and we're out here trying to combat and counter this propaganda, and people want to call us fake news, and they want to say, oh, well, you're just anti-American, that's why you're criticizing Trump and stuff. It's like, no, dude, like, you guys aren't even seeing the deeper issue here.
Man, it's you nailed on a exact point that I wanted to make. And me and Claire were talking about it on my show, on our show on Thursday, which is that the great tragedy here in the alt-left and the alt-right butting heads, Antifa versus the alt-right or whatever, however you want to call it, Antifa versus Nazis. And, you know, and for the purpose of moving forward, I'm not going to take sides here. I mean, I do think one side is probably more morally justified than the other, but I'm not going to, you know, they're both choosing the wrong tactic. But the important thing that you hit upon is that, and, you know, I've been talking about a left-right coalition for a while for the purposes of challenging the deep state. The tragedy is that there are core issues that the alt-left and the alt-right both fervently agree upon, and that's anti-war and anti-banking oligarchs. You know, I think there's probably a couple of other issues that you could find. Base level issues, anti-surveillance probably would be one of them. But most certainly anti-war. So there really is an opportunity here for a vast new anti-war coalition. And it's sad because it's unfortunate, because all this propaganda and all this hatred and all this turbulence is really just distracting people, and it's distracting movements, and it's causing movements to fight each other, and it's making it impossible for us to ever come together against, like you said, the parasitic oligarchs that we now have just really objective, irrefutable evidence that this is going on now. That the deep state, whatever you want to call it, the deep state, I think, is the best term for it. But, you know, we have an opportunity here, and who knows? It's not over yet. Maybe we can still find a way to merge these groups together, but it's certainly not going to happen when they're, you know, clipping each other's heads in on the streets. And I don't know what it's going to take, but it's definitely going to take a new era of critical thinking. And we're going to have to get apolitical. And, you know, even some of my close liberal friends, they refuse to negotiate. Some of them refuse to negotiate even with libertarians, much less the alt-right. They just view it as white supremacy, and they refuse to even acknowledge it as an ethos. And
that's one of the good things about Trump and the alt-right movement, is that it has kind of flushed out the racists out of the Libertarian Party. Because, you know, I come from a very libertarian background, I got really politically active following my support of Ron Paul in the 2011-2012 presidential election. And after that is when I started becoming active in politics. And I didn't realize that there was a contingent of racists and white supremacists in the libertarian movement. But thankfully, after this election, they all kind of shifted out and went for Trump and joined in with the alt-right. And now the Libertarian Party has really been flushed out of a lot of the bad parts of it, and now the Libertarian Party is actually pretty damn clean, and they're the people and the group, it's shrunk a little bit because, like I said, they lost some support over to the Donald Trump side of things. But the Libertarian Party is very principled at this point, and you know, they've got a lot of great ideas. I think what the main thing they could use is better candidates, because, you know, Gary Johnson, he's been around so long, he's already run for president like at least two times, it may be three at this point. Yeah, he's got experience, but the guy is not a modern day. He's not the kind of guy that can win a modern election.
He needs to look up. He needs to know and learn his geography a little bit better.
I didn't even know what Aleppo was. I mean, like,
yeah, I'm sorry. Like, I'm really bad at geography, like painfully, horribly bad. But I'm not running for president. If I were running for president, I would have had an answer to where, you know, what's going on with Aleppo. I mean, I don't know. I get, you know, I'm spatially, I'm really bad, like geometrically, I'm really bad spatially. So I forget where places are, but I definitely know what the hell is going on in Aleppo. I don't know how he screwed that one on.
And dude, the thing is too, is that libertarians are part of their big appeal is foreign policy. They're non-interventionist. So
like, yeah, know, that's an issue I agree with libertarians on for sure.
Yeah, if Gary Johnson doesn't know what's going on in foreign policy, then there's something, you know, he's not doing his job. You know, the main issues that I agree with libertarians on are foreign policy and the drug war, you know, and those are the two big things. And Gary Johnson was pretty good on the drug war, but on foreign policy, the guy just didn't know what was going on.
Dude, that's exactly that drug war was the other issue that I couldn't remember that I talked about with Claire. But the war, drug war, and I think surveillance and civil privacy issues, I think, are three issues. Ralph Nader and Ron Paul actually drew up, or they're working together. Ralph Nader was the one who actually drew up like something like 10, maybe even more overlapping issues, intersectional issues that he thought that liberals and libertarians could work together on. And it just makes me so frustrated that people cannot see the forest for the trees here and get past little quibbles over certain issues. Look, we have this is the greatest struggle in the history of mankind, what's going on right now. We have the greatest empire that's ever existed, and it's affording a certain way of life for a certain number of people, and they consider themselves living in the greatest country that's ever existed. But we know for a fact that this is one of the most corrupt empires that's ever existed. And we have here an opportunity to unite against a few issues. We're not going to tackle all of them at once. We're not going to clean house on everything at once. We have to be strategic and work together, strength in numbers, you know, and we really could work together. I would gladly work together with, you know, a coalition of alt-right libertarians to combat war, drug war, and privacy. But I have other people that are, you know, I don't even really consider myself a leftist anymore. I'm more anarcho-syndicalist, but, you know, It drives me absolutely nuts that people cannot think outside this left-right spectrum. This is killing us.
Yeah, dude. Well, you know what I'm happy about is that there is a good contingent of people that are above this left-right kind of fray. Now, of course, everybody falls in a different point on the political graph, you know, and there's different levels of different things. And some people are on the left, some people are on the right, some people are on up and down and blah, blah, blah. There's a four axis kind of.
It's like a dance. People are dancing.
Yeah. You know, everyone's going to have disagreements politically. And if we didn't, God, life would be boring as shit, wouldn't it? These differences aren't something to beat each other up over. They're something to be, you know, something to embrace, I think, as long as you can get away from the coercion and the, you know, forcing people to live a certain way, whether it's we're going to force everyone to live under a capitalist empire or we're going to force everyone to live under communism. Both of those ideas sound pretty bad because they both include forcing people to do something.
Right. There's issues of coercion that are going to be very difficult to. I mean, these are really complex issues of how people want to see the world run. But at the very least, let's have this intellectual conversation while we're not bombing the shit out of third world countries. How about that? Once we stop bombing the shit out of children in Libya and other countries, then we can sit down and have this, you know, intellectual jerk-off session where we talk about how private property should be used and whatnot. But in the meantime, people are festering in prison from selling a plant, and children are having bombs dropped on them so that we can, you know, own poppy fields. I mean, this is just ridiculous, man.
Yeah, dude. I couldn't have said it better myself. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. So, you know, there's stuff we can do. I really like the work of Sterling Luxon. I don't know if you guys have heard of this guy, but he's an up and coming activist thinker who really does get above the left right stuff and has a new take on spreading these ideas, not just of anarchism, but I would say just, you know, real freedom, which is, you know, just people actually living free and doing what they want and respecting other people's rights and not hurting people and stuff. This guy, I'm going to try to get him on the radio show sometime soon. I should have had him on sooner, but you know, he's looking at it in a way of just communicating better nonviolently, and just understanding people who have different opinions than you. And going back to that point you made at the beginning of the show, Jake, because I find that very interesting because I hadn't heard that before. React to these opposing opinions as if they were hurt violently. You know, that's why it's so important if we're going to start trying to bring people over to a certain perspective, communicating it in a nonviolent way is like literally the most important thing. So I see people online, and I fall victim to this stuff myself fairly often because I get frustrated relatively quickly when I'm dealing with trolls online, and I'm more likely to say fuck off and ban people at this point than I am to, you know, sit there and try to have an intellectual conversation with someone who literally isn't interested in having an intellectual conversation. But that being said, I see a lot of people arguing online where it's just like insults and like trolling, and people think they're accomplishing something by trolling. You're not. Like, trolling people doesn't accomplish anything. In fact, it hardens people up and pushes them further into their own. It entrenches people. And so coming at this whole problem here that we're talking about of, you know, having an empire that speaks in our name and drops bombs with our paychecks and stuff. If we're going to get that to stop, first we've got to learn how to communicate with each other, because right now people can't even talk to each other. Whether we're dealing with the politically correct movement where, you know, you just can't say like a bunch of words at this point, or we're talking about, you know, the anti-social justice movement where people go around just trying to offend people on purpose, like, you know, Milo and people like that, and Ann Coulter and stuff, just going around trying to provoke people. These people are not activists. They're not advocates. They're not philosophers. They're trolling people. They're making this extremely incendiary situation much worse. And so that's why I get so fed up with people like Milo and them, is they're just causing more and more problems.
Real quick, it's called the backfire effect. And if you look up the oatmeal and look at the very first, read the very first cartoon. Anyway, sorry to kill the outro. Look up the backfire effect.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.
My name is S.M. Gibson.